Hi, I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
And I'm James.
And this is The Modern Enthusiast. Each week we talk about modern, which is our favorite format. We talk about plays, decks, cards, and everything else worth talking about in the format. This week we are going to be talking about the results from Grand Prix Madrid. We have a lot to talk about. Also, last week we talked about a bunch of old cards that are in 8th edition and early sets and reminding people they're still in modern, still talking about them. Go back and listen to that one if you haven't heard it yet. We got a lot of reader feedback where people were really interested in hearing us talk about that. So we are going to head off before we talk about Madrid. We're going to be talking about some old cards from 8th edition. But first, if you want to reach us, you can find us on Twitter. Our name there is Modern Podcast. You can also find this podcast and all the show notes on mtgcast.com. There you'll also find our email address and our RSS feed, so you can comment on the articles there, you can tweet to us, or you can figure out any other way to get a hold of us, including Carrier Pigeon. So, first of all, we wanted to talk about two cards that see a bit of play in Modern here. They have very similar effects. It's the show opinion that one is good and one is bad, and the cards are Boil and Choke. James, you brought this up when we were chatting before. Why don't you tell us your thoughts on Boil versus Choke?
Well, I've seen a lot of people who are now, with the success of Delver and Skipshift and Twin creeping up, reaching for their blue sideboard hate cards. And of the two of them, I really do not like Choke right now. I think Boil is an acceptable sideboard card. I'm not sure how exciting it is. I played two when I played last night. The definite upside to Boil is that since it's an instant, not only can you play it as a land hoser, but you can play it as a land hoser that also allows you to try to manipulate when other spells are resolved by being able to cast it on your opponent's end step or in the middle of combat or on your own end step when they're casting things. Additionally, it's going to blow up any islands they have, which is going to hamstring their mana. If they have two islands, it's just double stone rain for four mana. If they have one island, it's just, you know, demolish at instant speed. You're going to be able to destroy their lands. The problem with Choke is that Choke doesn't destroy the lands. It only leaves them tapped and unable to untap. So any lands they play subsequently turn to Lotus Petals, and a lot of decks are running a lot of non-basic dual lands, or like non-island dual lands. So the big one for this is Sulphur Falls and Cascade Bluffs. The Delver decks tend to run 3 to 4 Sulphur Falls, mostly as a way to get mana fixing that also avoids taking too much damage in the mirror. But a Sulphur Falls or two will run an entire Delver deck. That deck does not play a spell that costs more than 2 mana, with the exception of Treasure Cruise, which it often tries to pay for only 1 mana. And so, having Choke is just not the optimum sideboard card right now, because a lot of the decks just choose to ignore it or play around it. Additionally, Choke is not the most impactful card. If you play Choke and all of your opponent's lands are untapped, then it's not going to do anything until the first time they tap their lands for mana. So they're still going to be able to counter some number of your spells or cast some number of their spells. It's just, the only time it really works is if you catch someone who's playing a lot of islands, and they have a lot of islands in play, and they're tapped out, and you play it, and they don't draw their tapped lands. It's just, it doesn't have the same game impact that a Boil has. And additionally, it's easier to play around, and a lot of decks are just prepared for it with their mana-based construction.
Now, Adam, you are our resident blue-white-red control player. How do you feel about Choke versus Boil against you?
I think I pretty much feel the same way, actually. I think Boil is more devastating, typically. So I played blue-white-red last night at our local Modern, and I have 6 non-island blue sources in my deck, 4 colonnades and 2 sulfur falls. And also, the deck plays 26 lands. And so if you're frugal with your blue mana, it's not that big a deal. Our choke is not that big a deal. It's fairly easy to play around. In fact, I got choked last night and won that game handily. Actually, I got choked in 2 games and won both of them. No, I'm not. That's not necessary to say that Boil wins the games that Choke wins, and my opponent was playing Junk in that round, so he didn't even have access to Boil. But overall, I like that Boil is an instant. I like that Boil demands the answer on the spot, and that at the absolute worst, it's an instant speed demolish, which doesn't feel good, but your opponent will probably try and counter it. One of the things I've done with Blue-White Red in this metagame is cut a bunch of the cryptic commands so that not having this triple blue spell in your deck or not having as many of them makes your mana quite a bit better. So if you're cut off of triple blue, for example, your deck still functions just fine. You're not worried about having to get that or get to that every single game. And when you don't need that, you pretty much only need one or two blue, depending on what your hand looks like, to cast your spell. So I prefer Boil. It's also one of those cards, I would like to see Boil less, so I think it's better. It's one of those cards that a lot of times you can play in a deck where the blue-eyed-red player might want to board out a bunch of their counter magic for removal spells also, so that you end up post-board with this card that they don't actually really have answers to. So the deck that I played last night only has 8 main deck counter spells, and 3 of them are spell snares. So 2 cryptics and 3 mana leaks are the other counter spells that I've got in the main deck. So I think Boil is much better in that scenario. So,
you know, my thought about it too, I have never really feared a choke coming down. I think choke and those kinds of effects are good against decks like Scapeshift and Splinter Twin, where both of them need to have access to a number of lands or mana. I've never really worried about either of those cards coming down. Choke doesn't do a thing against Scapeshift because they just care about lands on the board. Boil can set them back 3 or 4 turns because typically the Scapeshift deck wants to get the Breeding Pool and then start getting out basic islands. Mm-hmm. So if you boil them, you really, really hurt them.
Also, against Scapeshift, you can catch the people who are being greedy and will oftentimes Scapeshift for all their non-basic lands so that if something goes wrong, they have all their colors to start rebuilding. And if you boil while they're tapped down and it hits 4 mountains or 3 mountains or 2 mountains and it takes them off 6 mountains, it stops the Scapeshift kill. So you could also do the just looking to see which lands they get. If they get 2 or more island mountains, you know, 2 or more steam events, you can break up the Scapeshift kill with your boil.
Throughout, like, me playing Modern in the last probably 6 or 8 months, I can remember being choked between real life and Magic Online probably, like, 10 or 12 times. And I'm sure I have not won all of those games, but I don't remember ever losing to choke because I couldn't untap my islands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I've lost those games because of other reasons, or, like, choke might have been a minor contributor, but overall, I'm not a big big fan of choke. That being said, it would be very good against my mono blue Shackles deck, but so would Boil.
I mean, the last time I played blue-red Delver consistently on Moto, I remember the games I lost to choke were the games in which all I had were islands and I didn't have any steam vents, and my opponent had a heck of a clock, or Sulfur Falls, and my opponent had a heck of a clock and I didn't have any cantrips to, like, even dig for new lands. But by and large, I have found that people will play that card and you will just kind of yawn and go on with your life.
Like, you definitely have to play the game a little bit differently when you have a choke in play. But when there's a threat of you getting boiled at any time, you have to play the game way differently.
You're right.
And keep in mind, too, with this format, this isn't Legacy, where I think choke is probably a really good card, where when you have a dual land, it's almost always an island. Like, you don't see very many non-land-typed non-basics in Legacy. You don't see very many Sulfur Falls and Glacial Fortresses and Celestial Colonies. When you see duels in Legacy, you see Tundras, Volcanic Islands, Tropical Islands, Underground Seas, that kind of thing. And choke is really good in that scenario where every single one of your opponent's dual lands taps for a blue and something. But that's not really the case in Modern. You have a lot of decks that run a lot of non-island, blue, non-basics. And if you're only choking your opponent for one land, you're not really doing much. When choke is Stone Rain, it's not very good. At least with Boil, it's instant speed, and like James said, you can play it on your opponent's end step, force them to counter it or to not have enough lands to have counter magic up on their turn, and you get to resolve the spell that you want to. And I think the value of it being an instant makes its quality go way up.
I also look, when I look at Choke, I think about what decks I see it pop up, and I see it show up in junk a lot. And I have to wonder whether choking an opponent is what a junk deck wants to do. Certainly they run Tectonic Edge, so I guess the dream is you choke them and then you Tech Edge their Sulfur Falls. But you don't lose with junk when your opponent hits 8 mana or they start Cryptic Commanding you. You lose when they Electrolyze 2 of your dudes or they Threads of Disloyalty your Tarmogoyf and you don't have the quick answer. And depriving them of mana, while it seems awesome, doesn't seem like the way that you beat that deck. Like, if I'm fighting against Blue-White-Red, I probably want all my voices and all my scavenging oozes before I even look at Choke.
It certainly depends on the matchup, and because we were talking about this last night and before the cast as well, and I can conceive of games where the blue-red Delver or your blue-white-red control or your twin or probably even your scapeshift opponent has a tough time if you're able to play Choke on turn 3 or 4 or resolve Choke on turn 3 or 4. But those decks play so many blue sources that aren't islands that, and a lot of them can even function with just one blue source in play. Like, it might cut some of the cards off, it might not, but boiling your opponent in those matchups just seems a lot better because it actually sets them back, especially like an Escape Shift matchup where you can have 3 tapped mountains and it doesn't matter because you just need a certain number of lands as long as you have, you know, forest, and a filter land and something else. You know, you can still go and do your Escape Shift. You're still comboing and it's not affecting too much. So,
you know, and one other thought I had before we move on is that if you have already played one boil, drawing the second boil is very nice because now you can really crank it at an opponent. You can Eternal Witness your boil back. But casting a second choke while you have one choke on the board is just an insurance policy. It's saying you're not going to Cryptic Command your way out of this one. Whereas I like the idea of, okay, I'll boil you on turn 4, and then I drew my boil again on turn 9, and I'll hit you again. And that's a much more persistent threat.
Yeah, it's something we hadn't really talked about either. Like, Choke is in the same category with the card like Rest in Peace or Grafdigger's Cage, something like that, where redundant copies of that card do exactly nothing when you draw them. So
I think our conclusions here are that Boil is worth considering playing, but we really don't like Choke as a card. Listeners, if you're listening, you have different experiences with Choke. If we've been playing it wrong or analyzing it wrong, please write in and let us know, and we will air your comments about it. But next we want to move on to GP Madrid. So this was a modern tournament last weekend, and it was pretty cool. We had a top 8. It was won by a blue-red-green Delver deck. I'm not going to be calling it the Wizards associated name of a certain clan in Tarkir. It was Rug Delver, and it was the only Delver deck that showed up. You know, I had looked at the top 8 decks, and I was fascinated by it. There was only one deck running Treasure Cruise, which is the one that won. There were a few copies of Dig Through Time in Scapeshift. But I think what surprised me most, you know, was the amount of Malira Pod in the top 16. There were, I believe, between Malira Pod and Angel Pod, that there were quite a number of Birthing Pods, at least 3. There was a Junk deck, and I think that's an interesting way to attack back at Delver, and I had always thought that that would be a poor deck to play because they're running 3 Forkbolt main deck. But Kitchen Finks does do a good job of gumming up the ground, and unbolted Kitchen Finks will block elemental tokens. It's certainly a pretty good threat to be attacking in with.
On top of that, too, the Junk Pod decks have access to a lot of Orzhov Pontiffs, which clean up Young Pyromancer very nicely. They can also play Abrupt Decays to clean up Delvers.
That's a very good point, yeah.
And on top of that, those decks tend to gum up the ground with difficult-to-kill threats pretty well, and if they are able to resolve a birthing pod, you can really keep up on cards, I think, with the Delver deck, despite the fact that they're drawing cards. You can really keep up on value, basically, for what you're getting out of the pod. So
certainly, and you know, if you're allowed to pod a Kitchen Finks into a Siege Rhino and do that again the next turn, or pod it into a Restoration Angel to blink your Rhino, you're in very good shape against a Delver deck because you're up at least six life and you have two very, very hard to kill threats.
Yeah, the Rhinos seem very difficult for the Delver deck to deal with. One, they're really hard to race, and they cannot be chumped by.
And they have trample, yeah, so they get right through. I think that the best way to look at Grand Prix Madrid is to look at the entire top 16. There were some fascinating decks in here. There were two more Delver decks in the top 16. Evenfloak played one that had 18 lands. It had a white splash for two Geist of St. Traft off the board and two Rest for the Weary. Now, that's not Rest in Peace. Rest for the Weary is one and a white. It's an instant. Gain four life. If you land fall, gain four more life. So the idea is this gives you a big edge in the burn match and also the mirror because you can cast a Snapcaster Mage and walk away with 16 life, and that makes a huge difference. It turns off all those burn spells where somebody's going to be looking at a Pillar of Flame and wanting to point
it
at you.
That's pretty much fog seven cards against the burn deck.
Burn is surprisingly poor showing in this tournament too. Like for 19 day two decks, they had zero on the top 16, and burn has been a deck that had kind of been really coming into its own as like a GP winner tier one strategy.
Grand Prix Kobe was won by a burn deck, and there was another burn deck in the top eight.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the advent of the Boros burn deck, that had kind of been in back in GP Boston, burn had really been, you know, a tier one deck, and you'd seen at least one burn deck at the top of every tournament, and it's been doing pretty well in the Star City. So to see zero of the red white burn or the new Treasure Cruise Red White Burn, that's the three color, you know, burn decks in the top 16 was surprising to me, especially when it was, you know, one of the most popular day two archetypes. It had,
and it's got a fairly, I think it's supposed to have a fairly good matchup against the Delver deck, just because sometimes your Delver deck, you start at 14 life, and when the burn deck only has to do 14, it's pretty good. I've played against that blue white red burn deck on Moto a couple times and in real life a couple times, and it's a very good deck. You're kind of always on edge because whenever they get to cast a Treasure Cruise, you feel like you can't win.
Yeah, basically. Burn was the most popular deck day two to not put a deck in the top 16 because Delver, Rocks, Scapeshift, Affinity, and Birthing Pod all had decks in the top 16.
I mean, if people are jamming a lot of Siege Rhinos now in Modern, which that card seems pretty well-placed at the moment, reminds me a little bit of Thragtusk. It gets your come-into-play value, so even if it dies immediately or it gets returned to your hand, you have still gotten some value out of it, and just bouncing that guy and letting your opponent replay it seems pretty miserable, and
I think it compares favorably to the Vapor Snags that Delver decks are running. That's a card that I would not be wanting to Vapor Snag.
And it's because Delver is so popular, I think one of the reasons Pod did well is that because Delver is very popular, white decks are cutting down on their Path to Exiles, and, you know, when Abrupt Decay and Lightning Bolt are, again, the two principal removal spells in the format, which is what it seems like, you know, Siege Rhino is completely immune to both of those cards. They interact terribly with that card, and that guy causes a lot of problems. He gums up the ground, he gains you some life back, he burns your opponent out. Like, in the last round last night, I played against one of the junk decks with the four Siege Rhinos that has eschewed Dark Confidant and some of the other cards I didn't like too much in that deck, and I ended up winning the match, but game one, we got to this board parity where I had burn spells in my hand, and my opponent had nothing, and he went Siege Rhino off the top, and I just died.
Oh, yeah.
When all of your opponent's threats have to be pathed, basically, or you require a Wrath of God to get rid of them, yeah, I think that's real good, and that guy definitely causes awkward matchups, especially when backed up by Tarmogoyfs and other removal spells. So I guess I think that the Blue-Red Delver deck kind of took the field by surprise a little bit a couple of weeks ago, and now everyone is, you know, is warping around beating that deck, mm-hmm. and people forgot that there are a lot of good cards against the Blue-Red deck. It was just we had kind of stopped playing them all, and now that everyone has those back in their deck and they're adapting with some new stuff, that deck is kind of having a hard time winning. So I think we had three total Delver decks in the top 16, only one of which was the true Blue-Red 75. The other two were playing other stuff. And even the Rug Delver deck that won, that deck, like, Tarmogoyf seems very geared towards playing against the mirror. Like, that seems like a heck of a trump. Like, when you're playing against Blue-Red Delvers and Pyromancers, when you can just drop a Tarmogoyf on turn two, it seems like you're way ahead.
I suspect part of the poor showing of Blue-Red Delver has to do with a lot of Delver-on-Delver violence. I mean, let's tell us this. There were 24 Blue-Red Delver decks in Day 2, which is the most. I mean, there were more Blue-Red Delver decks than all the Rock archetypes combined. And so I think a lot of what happens is just when two Delver decks play, one has to win, one gets a loss. And when you're looking at a tournament where three losses probably gets you top 16 and four losses gets you out, mm-hmm. if you started off your day playing Delver twice, you probably knocked out two Delver players. I mean, so I think the deck is certainly very good. It's kind of certainly here to stay. Though there were some decks in the top eight especially, I think are just purely a reaction to Delver. The return of anyone playing Marner or Proc, I think, is just solely based on the return of Delver, because that is a very interesting deck selection for a major tournament. For those of you not familiar, the Martyr Proclamation deck is the non-aggressive version of the Soul Sisters deck. It literally wins via a long attrition game, usually backed up by the fact that Misfail Plans will let you put any card from your deck, from your graveyard, on the bottom of your library if you have two white creatures in play. And so, the deck plays a really, really long game where it gets to, how much does it cost to provide Proclamation to forecast Martyr Proc?
I think forecasting it is six.
Yeah, you get the six mana.
You get to proc. Yeah.
You use your Weathered Wayfinder, and you go get Emeria the Sky Ruin, and then that's all she wrote at that point.
Yeah, at that point, you never cast another spell, and then every turn you sacrifice a Martyr of Sands, you gain 21 life, and you just keep doing this.
Yeah, and the idea with Mistvale Plains and what makes that combination so good against a Delver deck, for example, is Squadron Hawk. So you cast one Squadron Hawk, you get your three more, they kill the Squadron Hawk, you Misfail it to the bottom of your library. The next time you cast a Hawk, you go find that other one.
Yeah, you get to cycle your Hawks.
Well, and part of what also makes the deck just so bad is that you don't, at seven lands, you don't cast any spells. You reveal the Proclamation from your hand, it brings back the Martyr of Sands, you sacrifice the Martyr of Sands, you gain 21 life. The Delver deck has to do more than 21 damage every turn in order to damage you. The deck is backed up by Wrath of Gods as a way to clear the board. By the way,
was not arguing that Delver is a bad choice in this meta.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to talk about that for just a moment before we go into Soul Sisters and Martyr again. Various people had said online, well, people must not have brought Delver because they knew the field would be gunning for it. And that is not the way pros think. If you can identify the best deck in the format, and there's no deck that obviously beats it and has a good chance against the rest of the format, then you play the best deck. I mean, there's one psyche of a Magic player that says, I'm going to be playing Martyr Proclamation because it beats Delver. And then there's another psyche, which is often the competitive player, who says, I can still beat Proclamation with Delver if I have practice, and I get lucky sometimes. And also, Blue-Red Delver is so good against the rest of the format that I will take my losses against the deck with 20 dedicated life gain spells and four Ghostly Prison main deck. So, James reinforced this point. I think you said there were 29 Delver decks that made Day 2?
There were 24 Blue-Red Delver alone. So,
and that was the most common one.
37 Delver decks altogether.
And that speaks to the idea that people did bring the best deck. And look, I'm just like the, I'm one of those people who says I want to play the deck that beats the best deck. I never want to be playing Delver when I can be playing something else. And that is, that's a minority viewpoint. So I think at that point we can jump in, to talk about Martyr Proclamation a little bit more. And I also would like to note that that is a deck that people don't pick to play as a good metagame choice, I found. The guys who play Mono White Martyr, that's all they play. And I'm sure you recognize this. It's like the guy in your store who plays the Goryeo's Vengeance deck. Like, they don't play it because it's good. They play it because now and then they get the Grizzlebrand for 21 cards and they have 3 attack steps in one turn. Like, the people dream about sitting behind a prison full of suppression fields and ghostly prisons and gaining life every turn and frustrating an opponent. And that's the people who play the Martyr Proc decks.
Okay. I feel like Martyr Proc is probably a really great choice for this. In fact, if he hadn't gotten paired against the red-green breach combo deck in the first round of the top 8, I dare say he probably stood a very good chance of winning this. I just don't
think Annihilate 6 doesn't really care about your life total.
Doesn't care about your life total, and I don't think he's ever actually beating that deck. Also, that deck had Chalice of the Voids and some other cards to kind of really delay his game plan. And it had 2 copies of Sowing Salt, which is a good way to get rid of your Myriad of the Sky Ruins and your
Mistvale
Plains to stop you from going off. But, like, I do not enjoy playing that Martyr Proclamation deck. I used to play it on Magic Online back in Extended because it was very cheap to put together. This is a metagame where if you can tolerate that deck, I think that deck is a hell of a choice against the Delver matchups. Because you're getting to this point where the Delver deck has to do 22 points of damage a turn just to get in for 1. And, you know, I think that that was probably a really good metagame call. One of the interesting things about this tournament was how many of the decks in the top 8 were really seemed to be, like, there specifically to prey on the Delver decks. There was a Breach combo deck that was a Through the Breach. Attempting to play Through the Breach and Summoning Trap to get Emrakul or Primeval Titan into play. That had 3 main deck Chalice of the Voids and 4 main deck Anger of the Gods. And that deck seemed very well positioned to specifically go after just the Delver decks.
Mm-hmm. Was there any Twin in the top 16?
There was, in fact. Patrick Diekman came in, I believe, 9th. But he was in the top 16. He had a fascinating list. I put it together last night, and it's as greedy as they come. Patrick is a greedy Magic player, and it works for him. He's only running 22 lands. He has 4 Dig Through Time instead of the typical 3, which is another greed element. I really like the list. I think it's a great starting point for more twin lists. There was also, I believe, another twin deck that was very close to his. But it was running more lands, less Snapcaster Mages, less digs. I think it had only 1 or 2 Dig Through Time in it. So right now in twin, there's a debate over how many digs you should run as well as how many Cryptic Commands you should run. Cryptic is obviously terrible against Blue-Red Delver, but Cryptic is quite good against other strategies. The one thing I'll say about the non-Diekman twin deck was he was running a Keranos on his board, and I've leaned away from Keranos, and the reason why, and this is a playstyle thing that you guys should be aware of, when people are sideboarding against twin, they bring in Spellskite. Makes sense, steals the Splinter Twin, stops Pestermite combo. Spellskite also, for the price of a blue mana, stops Keranos from ever burning you out. Because if they ever roll that guy up in Shock or Lightning Bolt with him, you can just put it on a Spellskite. So you're playing a 5 mana card that maybe half the time will draw you an extra card, and the other half the time will Rashad and Port an enemy down for 1 island during your turn. So I think the Diekman list with 2 Batterskulls on the board is quite a bit better, because his typical plan is he's going to board out 2 Exarchs and 2 Splinter Twins and be boarding in Batterskulls among some other things and still be able to threaten the combo, but be able to Batterskull people as well.
I'm somewhat completely off Keranos in Modern. It's been my testing of that guy that the turn that he doesn't bolt that you need him to bolt is just, like, almost intolerable. The card is very good, and there are a lot of decks that can't get him off the board.
No, but the black-green X decks really hate to see Keranos. That's the one that I can think of.
Also, like, I played that against him once, and it turns out that Keranos can't block Tarmogoyf, and sometimes, you know, 3, 4, and 4, 5 Tarmogoyfs just don't care that he's there, and they keep swinging. And it's like, yeah, he's out of the board, but you're, you know, racing, taking damage. So it's always been my experience with him that, like, that turn that you draw a land and you draw the next card down too, it just doesn't do enough to justify having the slot. The card I've been trying to convince Adam to try out is the 5-mana Chandra Nalar.
Tell me more.
Chandra Nalar has, we believe it's 6 loyalty to start. Goes up to 7 if you just ping your opponent. And it can eat almost any threat that anyone would play in Modern and survive to require another spell.
Now, she Flame Tongues in that she can remove X loyalty counters to deal X damage to a creature.
Yeah, she starts at 6. She costs 6 loyalty. She starts for 3 in red-red. Her plus 1 is just ping your opponent for 1. Her minus X is minus X to do X damage to a creature. And her ultimate is 10 damage to a player and all creatures they control. And it just seems if you wanted a slow, grindy clock that's hard to affect, she could kill a Tarmogoyf, even a 4-5 Tarmogoyf, and still have 1 loyalty left over. It's not the fastest clock on Earth, but it's certainly still a point of turn. It can eat any of the Delver threats and still have a lot of toughness left over. It eats a Fluff Delver and it still has 4 toughness, kills a Young Pyromancer, still has 5 loyalty counters left over. That seems like a pretty good way of controlling the board right now. And one of the things I like is that her ultimate is just like, it only takes 3 turns to get to her ultimate. So if you play her on an empty board and go ping, 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 you can just 10 your opponent. She's done 13 damage. And that should be enough to close out most games of Magic. I also just like the fact that she's going to kill a Siege right now. And that's a big threat that they'll talk about now. I mean, you're seeing junk decks that are running Tarmogoyfs and Siege Rhinos, and you play something like a Keranos, and that Siege Rhino doesn't care. I mean, that Siege Rhino has effectively protection from Keranos, or makes you 2-for-1 with Keranos, at which point that Rhino has gained you 6 life and, you know, drained your opponent for at least 3. So I like something that does a little bit more damage right now, and she certainly kind of fits the bill. And being a little bit more grindier and requiring multiple cards from your opponent to answer it.
I was looking her up on Magic Online last night. She's about 20 cents, so we could probably test that if we need
to. Inexpensive to test. I do like that if you draw a second one that you can play it, and that you can get some value out of the one that you've rolled down to 1 or 2 loyalty before you do that. So you can ping an opponent, you can bump off a small creature, mm-hmm. and then play another one, roll right up to 7, and start the action again.
I just like that she kills a lot of the major Delver threats and still presents a lot of loyalty to be answered. I mean, killing Young Pyromancer and still having 5 loyalty left on your Planeswalker seems kind of impressive. You know, then even if they have a couple tokens, it's still going to take a couple tokens and a Lightning Bolt. You know, cards, a Fog. It's going to gain you a lot more than other options we've been talking about that, you know, will deal with the creature eventually, but not necessarily right away. I also don't like waiting the turn on Keranos. I've kind of fallen out of favor with playing a card and then having to wait a turn before it does anything.
In the vein of Chandra, I had tried Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker a few weeks ago, and under the same kind of idea that he does a pretty good Flame Tongue Kavu impression where he can come into play, kill something, and then you know, he goes to your opponent's head for a lot of damage after that and might be able to kill something again in the future. The thing that's sort of attractive about Chandra against him is Chandra has a pretty relevant ultimate ability, whereas in the Revelation version, Sarkhan's emblem is not even something you really want, actually, because it forces you to discard your hand.
Yeah, you draw 3 extra cards, and then you discard at the end of every turn.
I think it's you draw 2 extra. You draw 3 per turn, and then you have to discard at the end of your
turn. So then you're basically turning into a Lightning Bolt and Snapcaster deck.
Which, ultimately, that's kind of what you are anyway. You're a fancy burn deck.
The other thing is that Sarkhan will eat a path to exile.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, after thinking about it last night, after we talked about it, the Chandra seems like it's kind of interesting. I think it's a Planeswalker that never got a lot of love.
I think it would be the first time it actually saw constructed play as if you tried it out.
It saw a vague amount of play in the very old red standard decks of Bill Stark, but yeah, that's so long ago, I'm not sure it's even worth mentioning.
I remember in Standard one time during Alara having my Baneslayer Angel killed by a Chandra, and then I played a second Baneslayer Angel and the game ended again. But I think that was sort of what her big calling was back then, was she could kill a Baneslayer Angel and stay in play out of the red deck.
Yes.
But, yeah, she definitely, is an interesting card and sort of is filling that role of big thing that your opponent has a hard time, dealing with. Cause, you know, we have talked, James and I have talked about a lot of cards cause I played a Gideon last night in that spot and it was fine, but not super exciting. And, I kind of agree with the sentiment about Keranos that he's just not doing a ton right now. And Batterskull actually ends up falling to that same category where there's a good chance it's not going to be bigger than your Tarmogoyf, and it's never bigger than your Siege Rhino. So it's sometimes it's tough to figure out that haymaker that is right, or then the discussion sort of turned into, do you even need a haymaker at that point? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, if you're just casting Sphinx's Revelation, or if you're in a twin deck and you're doing something completely different than that, is there even a reason to have a card like that? So,
and I think that's what we were talking about also with Choke, about are you playing a card that actually fixes something that's wrong with your deck? I mean, that's fundamental sideboarding stuff, but when you're looking at a board and you say, well, I have two spots left and I'm playing against, you know, I'm going to be playing against a fair number of blue decks, I should have something. And Choke is pretty good against Islands, you know. That can be hard. It can be perhaps a bad decision to be running down. I mean, you could, if you wanted to do it in Modern, you could also even run River Boa, which is in, reprinted in Zendikar instead of Choke. And River Boa gets there and does a whole lot of work versus the blue
gets
decks,
in,
too.
Gets in for damage. One of the other cards James and I had talked about this morning was Inferno Titan. If you really want to go back over the top, it's can probably count on one hand the number of games where I've seen that card resolved and the person who resolved it not won.
Mm-hmm.
Like he comes down, he affects the board. Every time he gets to attack, mm-hmm. He pulls you progressively farther and farther ahead. He's also a 6/6 for 6, so it's hard to kill. Again, he's Lightning Bolt and Abrupt Decay immune. So.
And he's arc lighting when he comes into play, so one of the things he does is he cleans up the Delver decks and the Pod decks creatures pretty well. We've been running one in the sideboard of Scapeshift as the alternate win condition for a while, and it's just tested very well. And I wonder, like, if, you know, if you have a control deck and you're reaching for a big win condition, if that's not a one you'd want to look at.
I think the sort of the answer is that these five drops that come into play and don't immediately affect the board like Keranos are not great. And then things like Batterskull and then Keranos can also fall into this category that don't interact well with an X4 or an X5 are just, their value has gone way down. So there was a time when casting like two Batterskulls out of your twin sideboard was completely industry standard because your opponent's trying to stop you from comboing, and you bring in this thing that they can't deal with, but now all of a sudden you bring in your Batterskulls to deal with the junk deck, but they've got a bunch of 4/5s and for 4 and 4/5s for 2 sitting in play, and all of a sudden your Batterskulls look pretty mediocre. So it's, part of that is the shift of the meta with like the Delver decks being real big, and you can't afford to have cards like Keranos come into play that don't do anything, or you can't afford to tap out for your Batterskull, have your token Vapor snagged, and then get killed. So cards like the Chandra and the Sarkhan to a lesser extent coming down and immediately affecting the board is really important.
You know, I'm going to keep that in mind because I had been playing Twin recently, and I had tried a Pearl Lake Ancient, which was fun. I mean, you can actually get to 7 mana, and the idea with that was that I didn't want to be facing Combust. I didn't want to be playing against Counterspells. I just wanted to play a big dumb Leviathan that Wizards made because they don't like people who play Counterspell decks. And it was fine. I also played a Teferi Mage of Zelfir, and that card really shuts down Delver decks because they have to spend a Combust on it, or they just never get to play their deck again. And that deck is very oriented on digging through and finding your one or two cards that you know are going to stop the opponent and protect your creatures. And when you can say, okay, I mean, here's this Teferi, now your Snapcaster end of turn doesn't work, now your combat tricks don't work. You know, you attack with Monastery Swift Spear, and its power and toughness are fixed at this point. There's no going to be no pumping involved, and it has flash, so you can really threaten people with it.
Mm-hmm.
I have been trying Goblin Assault, which is a Zendikar card. It's a 2 and a red. It spawns a hasty goblin every upkeep, and then you have to attack with all goblins. And so I think that the appeal there is that if you get one token out so that you're attacking with two tokens every turn, even if opponent's chump blocking one, they're never going to stop it. You know, Delver gets rapidly overwhelmed by Goblin Assault if they can't stick a Swift Spear to block. And when your game becomes stick an assault and kill the Swift Spear, then that's a lot easier. Or even run out another token.
And when your Delver opponent is on blocking duty with their creatures, it's pretty good. I remember playing that card. It was the Alara Zendikar standard, and there was a Planeswalker control deck that didn't do anything before turn 4 or 5 typically. And you can, if you stick that card early, or even if you stick it a little bit later, but you get counter magic in like making a guy every turn and forcing the issue with your opponents. Pretty cool. It seems like an insane trump in the Delver mirror, actually. Certainly. Because they don't really have any way of ever getting it off the field. There is exactly no enchantment removal in blue and red, so they can bounce it potentially, or they can hopefully for them counter it on the way down. But once it hits, it's a big problem.
Yeah, I guess your best interaction with it is Vapor Snag their token, make a token with your Young Pyromancer, and get in for the attacks, but it's a very challenging card to race.
Yep.
I will be thinking about Inferno Titan, though, on the twin sideboard, for the reason that I think you're right. You don't want to be running cards that don't affect the board when they come into play. You want to be playing a card that gets over the top of Siege Rhino. And I do like the idea that if I play Inferno Titan against a Delver deck, and they have Vapor Snag, I'm not going to get, for example, my Germ token Vapor Snagged and then attacked. I'm going to be able to wipe the board, and if they Vapor Snag, I'll be able to get through again.
Yeah, he cleans up stuff very, very well. And it goes back, I remember when Bitter Blossom and Wild Nacatl both got unbanned. I had been testing fairies, and James was testing Zoo quite a bit. And remember him playing a lot of Zoo mirrors on Magic Online. And he ran into an opponent who was playing Kitchen Finks as a trump in the Zoo mirror, and James was playing Thragtusks as a trump. And when you're going to go... My philosophy now is when you're going to go over the top, make sure you're really going over the top, because Kitchen Finks is not... Kitchen Finks is a good card. It's been a solid man as long as he's existed. But he certainly is not going over the top in an aggro mirror, and Thragtusk is certainly going over the top. And at this point, I think that cards like Batterskull and Keranos might not really be going over the top anymore, but Inferno Titan is certainly going over the top. And in that vein of being able to get value out of your cards, even something like the Souls from M15 might not be the actual worst, because if they get killed, you can still get some value off of them. I'm by no means saying that I think Soul of Shandalar is more impactful than Inferno Titan. I think it's quite the opposite. Inferno Titan is insane. But it's cards like that are something to consider, especially when you don't think your opponent is going to be ready for them.
Certainly.
So shock value and surprise value from those cards is certainly a thing that matters.
Because you're playing against the opponent when you're playing Twin, and they've got the Combust in hand, they've got the Spellskite on the board, they're feeling really good, and then you jam that Inferno Titan, and then they have no response to that. And then next turn, you attack in, you Fire Breathe it, you're attacking for 12 or 15 damage.
No amount of Combusts and Spellskites are going to stop your Inferno Titans. And it's a card that definitely goes back over the top of a lot of things your opponent can do. It's a card that, if you know it's going to resolve, tapping out for it is okay, because it is so much bigger than what your opponent is going to be doing.
And on the note of Batterskull, I have very rarely seen a Batterskull successfully return to a player's hand and then recast. Which makes me think I would rather roll up another mana and get a Wyrmcoil Engine, which is an actual horrible threat for anybody to face down, and be able to fight. I mean, if you Vapor Snag my Germ token on my Batterskull, I have to pay 8 mana to get that back. And if you Vapor Snag my Wyrmcoil, I only have to pay 6.
Yeah, in that vein, too, against all the non-Path to Exile decks, of which most decks right now in this format are, bless you, Wurmcoil is just ridiculously difficult to deal with. It is a 6-6 that will make more guys, and it's just miserable for your opponent to try and get through. While we're on the subject of 6-drop Mythic Rares, I played an Elspeth Sun's Champion in my sideboard last night.
Fascinating.
And had an awesome game 2 in the final round against my junk opponent, where it was the all-standard mirror in Modern. I was playing Dig Through Times and 6-mana Elspeth, and he was playing Courser of Krufix and Siege Rhino. And the Elspeth certainly got there, because that card is extremely difficult to beat. But it basically did exactly what I wanted to do, which was, it's this giant thing you can peel off the top that your opponent is not going to be able to deal with or, mm-hmm. or go back over, and that card is just, you know, out of this world. So again, if you're looking for things that go over the top and you're playing white, Elspeth certainly qualifies as one.
And with people rolling down the number of counters they play in their decks, you were talking about shaving Cryptic Commands and upping your burn spells and Electrolyze. You know, people are cutting Remands. The twin decks typically run only 3 Remands and 1 Cryptic. The Delver decks don't run any Remands. The ones that showed up in the top 16 were typically running 2 Spell Pierce and 2 Mana Leak. And if you're playing out a creature like Wurmcoil Engine, Spell Pierce can't say a thing about that.
I believe the Rug Delver guy had some number of Remands in his deck. I don't remember the exact number. I think it was 2.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, counter magic against the Delver deck is not, I feel like that's not really the battle that you want to fight, because when they're casting Spell Pierces, Spell Snares, Mana Leaks, and Remands, resolving your spells is a lot harder, and because their counter magic is so cheap, that's not the battle you want to be fighting, whereas playing as many one mana removal spells as you can is really a good place to be. Or things like Volcanic Fallout, Pyroclasm, Anger of the Gods, Electrolyze, Forkbolt, all those cards that will get multiple cards of theirs off the table while only costing you one. And in that same vein, when everyone is cutting down on counter magic, all of a sudden you can resolve 4, 5, and 6 drops a heck of a lot more easily than you could
certainly
before.
And even Path to Exile is getting cut or sided out a lot now.
Because you'd rather have Lightning Bolts and Fork Bolts and stuff like that against the Delver decks than the Pyroclasm, because that deck already functions very well on 2 to 3 lands, and giving them another land or two makes it very much more difficult for you to execute your game plan, especially mm-hmm. when they're drawing 3, and then all of a sudden they can play all 3 of those cards immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that I had written on my list here that we wanted to chat about briefly was that there were a couple Fracturing Gusts. And I think Fracturing Gust is the card I look at that there's that player who is always like, if I only had one more land, I would have beat you. And Fracturing Gust is that player's favorite card, because you're going to die against Affinity with Fracturing Gust in your hand every time. And then you're going to go, I had this, and if I drew one more land, I wouldn't have ever lost against you. You know, even though I know you have Etched Champion out, and you're going to be able to continue to attack me with Blink Moth Nexus.
What's the deck that was playing Fracturing Gust, do you remember?
It's easy enough to look up.
I feel like I'd rather play Granulate than Fracturing Gust, but I'm going to play... Granulate is 2 red-red, and it destroys all non-land artifacts with converted mana cost 4 or less. It was the Shatterstorm they printed during the...
It is an even worse Shatterstorm.
It was the Shatterstorm they printed during the Mirrodin block.
Yeah, so Jose Antonio Rodriguez Pozo's deck, which is a Birthing Pod deck, runs 2 Fracturing Gust on the board. I mean, and then Kevin Grove ran 2 in his Birthing Pod deck. I suppose you can make a claim for running Fracturing Gust because...
Corrosion not available.
Yeah, I feel like that card, because it gains life and it looks cool and it's a card that not a lot of people are going to play... I think that's just greedy. When you have access to cards like Ancient Grudge, Shatterstorm, Creeping Corrosion, if we're just talking about specific Affinity hate, like mm-hmm. all of those are better than Fracturing Gust.
Mm-hmm.
Paying 5, like 5 mana spells in this format have to be like game ending. And I just feel, I've never cast a Fresh Ingest in my life, but I feel like that card is just not, and for the effect, and the mana cost is just not where you want to be, because you can very easily be dead by the time, you're casting that card. And if you need that same kind of effect, in a deck that's not playing red or green, you've got Wrath of Gods and stuff like that. And then in blue, you have cards like Hurkle's Recall. So you're not missing that effect, basically, in any color. And I feel like every color has a card that does that better than Fracturing Gust. So, like, in green, you have Cuban Corrosion, red, you have Shatterstorm, Hurkle's Recall, Wrath of God, Supreme Verdict. You know, pick your sweeper, and black has, you know, stuff like Damnation, Drown in Sorrow, that kind of stuff. And all of those cards seem more impactful in that matchup to me than Fracturing Gust does.
You can make a colorable argument that Fracturing Gust works best in a Birthing Pod deck on account of you will probably still be alive by the time you can resolve it. Your mana creatures aren't going to be attacked, so you can tap a Hierarch and a Wall of Roots and three lands and be able to crack it off faster than turn five. But my other fear is that if you've got a Birthing Pod out and you're working the pod, you're going to have to blow up your own pod to get a Fracturing Gust, and you just may have to do that to stay alive, but it's not something I'm ever going to want to do. And if I'm packing Fracturing Gust, because enchantments just don't matter in Modern right now, you're not going to be casting a 5-mana Fracturing Gust against Splinter Twin and hoping it resolves. If you're planning to pack that card just to beat Affinity, I would rather run 2 more Orzhov Pontiffs on my sideboard and know that I'm just going to wreck Affinity much more quickly, like a turn 2 Pontiff against a Steel Overseer and a Memnite is lights out. And also know that you have 2 more Pontiffs to bring in against Delver.
Yeah, having access to Gataki and Pontiff, several creatures that just destroy an artifact on a 1-for-1 basis. I guess Fracturing Gust is good against Boggles, if that was some consideration.
If we need to destroy things against Boggles, though, if we need to destroy an enchantment, there are way better things that can hate out the Boggle deck, too. In green and white, you can play Back to Nature and or Tempest of Light. And while I understand that Fracturing Gust might be a little bit more flexible, and that's something that's important in Modern, 5 mana for that flexibility is a lot, I think, in this format. So, you know, you can't argue with success. These guys did well. But I would like to hear the reason why they arrived at Fracturing Gust as opposed to Creeping Corrosion.
Certainly. Yeah. And if I'm playing a deck with Restoration Angel, then Restoration Sage has been... or Reclamation Sage. I have flipped my adjectives there. It's a very good card, and I have played Pod with 3 of those post-board, and you never lose against an Affinity deck because they're going to toss out an Ensoul Artifact and you hit it, and they're going to throw out a Steel Overseer, and you flash, or you Restoration Angel your Sage, and you get it again, and then... And then that's all she wrote at that point.
Was there any Affinity in the top 16?
There was not. I earnestly thought there was, but they just had Frank Carson's list published on TCG Player, but he was not in the top 16.
Which is another interesting thing, because I'm sure that it's not every single major Modern event that's ever existed, but Affinity has been in so many of them. It's kind of interesting that it's not there now. The Blue-Red Delver deck, to me, seems like it probably has great matchup against
that deck. Blue-Red Delver deck starts with 3 Fork Bolts, and I think...
4 Bolt, 3 Fork Bolt, and you even get the sideboard in the Shatterstorm.
Nice Arcbound Ravager, I've got this paper snag.
I want to say it was Caleb DeWard last week. Some major writer published an article last week where his list had 3 Fork Bolts, 3 Electrolyzes in the main deck, which seems pretty good against Affinity, and in fact, I think that's why... Like, I think that's why those 2 decks don't exist anymore. I mean, I was a devout Infect player for the summer, and that deck seemed extremely good every time I touched it. Now, you know, you don't want to be playing Infect in a room full of 4 Bolts, 4 Fork Bolts, 3 Electrolyzes, and 2 other random shocks that the Delver player felt like putting in his deck today.
So, wrapping this up, there was a lot of talk about ban Treasure Cruise, ban the Delve decks, ban Jeskai Ascendancy. We didn't see Ascendancy even in the top 16. We've seen what I would consider a very reasonable and fair representation of the bad guy Delve cards. And My opinion is that this goes back to what I was saying when these decks first reared up, which was that the metagame will adjust to beat them. And that if you can put three Malira decks in the top 16, then that tells me that even those decks can adjust to beat it. What are your thoughts on that, Adam?
I mean, I like the top 8. Or the top 16, rather. I think it's a good cross-section of the format. You got to see a lot of the Tier 1 and Tier 2 decks. And you got to see some creative stuff that we hadn't thought about, like the Imrakul Breach deck, which was a very interesting deck. It looks like quite the pile, but I think it plays a little bit better than that.
I don't know.
Maybe not.
You can watch a video of me salting hard while playing that deck, because that deck does absolutely nothing for 11 turns in a row if you go to game swaps.
So, Adam, do you think that, first of all, here's the easy one, Jeskai Ascendancy, should that card be banned?
It should probably be banned on principle, because it's not the deck is not a deck that Wizards wants to exist in the format.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it didn't show any results, so who knows?
Treasure Cruise.
I think Treasure Cruise is good enough to be banned, but sort of the boogeyman didn't dominate quite as much as everyone
was
going to.
In the top 8, where only one deck played Treasure Cruise and only one deck played Dictor Time, the winning deck played Treasure Cruise, the second place deck played Dictor Time, and all the other decks fell out of the wayside.
I mean, that's telling how good those cards are, but the rest of the 6 decks in the top 8 didn't play them, and I didn't do a count of how many existed in the whole top 16, but it would be less than I would have thought, given how good I think those cards are, how good everyone thinks those cards are, and how much they got played. So my guess is that we'll get Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise for a while, but ultimately those cards are probably very bannable. In the same vein, though, as the Blue or Delver deck we're talking about, in Legacy, when the Sneak and Show deck got really big for the very first time, after a week or two, everyone was calling for Show and Tell to be emergency banned because it was just miserable. And the format molded, people started playing cards that were good against it, and then everything kind of settled back into place. And that is what this kind of looks like to me, where we know that this deck exists, we know these cards are really good, and people will certainly play them, and it still might be kind of the boogeyman deck, but it's not unbeatable, and there are plenty of things that you can play that are really good against it, and a lot of the other Tier 1 strategies are still really good in the format and can do well, so.
Good analysis. Well, if you have thoughts about this top 8 and top 16 of GP Madrid and perhaps what it means for bannings in January or whether you think these cards are safe, let us know. Again, we have all the contact information at the top of the show, and I would like to thank you for joining us as we discuss GP Madrid this week. I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
I'm James.
And this has been the Modern Enthusiast.